You are listening to a free podcast of The Majority Report with Sam Cedar. To support the show and receive nearly an hour extra material daily, become a member today at majority.fm. Resistance is futile.
The Majority Report with Sam Cedar.
The destiny of America is always safer in the hands of the people than in the conference rooms of any elite.
Sam Cedar.
They are unanimous in their hate for me, and I welcome their hatred.
We must guard against the acquisition of unwarranted influence, whether sought or unsought, by the military-industrial complex.
The Majority Report with Sam Cedar.
If I get the feeling you've been cheated...
It is Tuesday, May 7th, 2013. My name is Sam Cedar. This is the award-winning Majority Report. We are broadcasting live in the literal, though not metaphorical, shadow of the New York Times building in the fashionable Dollar Lunch District of New York City. Today on the program, Beth and George Gage, the filmmakers of Bitter 70. The film that recounts the trial of Tim DeChristopher, recently released from prison. Also on the program today, the blurry red line. Has it been crossed in Syria? You know, Syria is not the same place, apparently, as Iraq, according to all the people who cheered for the Iraq war and want to justify another war in Syria. Meanwhile, climate change, not a problem for Christians. It's in God's hands. Gun protesters claiming they will march on Washington, D.C. with armed weapons. Online taxes coming soon to a website near you. Food allergies on the rise. And then a heartwarming story of the man in charge of making sure that there are no sexual assaults in the Air Force being arrested for sexual assault. All that and more, your phone calls on today's program, your IMs later in the show. I am now at near 83% in terms of health, so I anticipate no coughing fits during the show. Of course, in terms of sleep, I am riding somewhere around 38% of needed sleep because of my new child. Later in the week, I think Jim Gaffigan's going to be on the program on Friday. He's got five of them. And hopefully he'll give me some pointers.
He'll be like the first guest where you can't be the one complaining.
No, I'll complain. I'll still complain. He obviously, there's something wrong with his genes or something. Before we go to the interview today, this story in, which... stretches one's credulity. In the New York Post today, Tuesday morning, Chris Christie was interviewed. And apparently, a few months after turning 50 years old, I think that was several months ago, New Jersey Governor Chris Christie secretly underwent lap band surgery. That would be last February. And why? He says, when asked if it was anything to do with a presidential run in 2016, he said, no, it's so much more important than that. I know it sounds crazy to say that running for president is minor, but in the grand scheme of things, it was looking at Mary Pat, his wife, and the kids and going, I have to do this for them. Of course, that's why he did. He did it for the kids and for his wife and not for any presidential aspirations. No, it's a coincidence. Because I didn't have kids or a wife before people started talking about the presidential election in 2016. Yes, ladies and gentlemen, Chris Christie did it for the wife and for the kids, even if, in his own words, he doesn't give a crap about himself. Oh, God. Oh, Lord. Also, in a unrelated note, Chris Christie has a bridge to sell you. And, in fact, he also apparently has a an expanded commuter rail tunnel underneath the Hudson River to sell you, if you buy that. So enjoy, ladies and gentlemen. Chris Christie, he did it for the kids. And all the children wept. Thank you, Governor Christie. Thank you, America's governor, who, despite his weight loss, assuming there is any, will be dropping out of the race the day after the New Hampshire primary. All right, folks. We're going to take a break. When we come back, we're going to be talking to Beth and George Gage, the filmmakers of Bitter 70. Documentary about Tim DeChristopher. We'll be right back after this. We are back, Sam Seder on the Majority Report on the phone. It is a pleasure to welcome to the program Beth and George Gage. They are the filmmakers behind the film Bitter 70, which has been through the film festival circuit, has done quite well, and is basically recounts the story of Tim DeChristopher and the 2 years, essentially, that have, I guess now 3 years, that have taken place since he walked into a Bureau of Land Management oil and gas lease auction. And, we will talk about that story in just a moment. Beth and George, you there? Thanks for joining us.
Yes, thank you. It's our pleasure.
Hi, Sam.
Hi, Beth. Hi, George. So, all right, let's start first. I mean, we've been following Tim DeChristopher's story on this program since at least early 2011. But if you want to just give us a little summary of the film. I've watched the film. It's incredibly moving. Just give us a little a brief summary about the film.
Well, the film goes into a lot of obviously the auction itself and what Tim did, how he protested against the auction by doing a peaceful act of civil disobedience, and then it follows him as he's indicted by the Obama administration, which was a big surprise to us. At that point, the trial kept getting postponed and postponed and postponed, and what Tim was during that period of time was a lot of different activism. In other words, he's from West Virginia. We went out to West Virginia. He sort of learned what he didn't know firsthand about mountaintop removal. It outraged him. He came up with a very clever idea to come up with a candidate to run against a Blue Dog Democrat who was like a six-time incumbent. He went on Craigslist and actually found a candidate, a very good candidate, to run against Mr. Matheson. And she actually did very, very well and turned it into a primary run. So we followed him just about everything he did, a lot of personal things, but a lot of activism during this period of time where the trial just kept getting postponed. And one of the reasons it kept getting postponed is if things weren't favorable for the other side, for oil and gas, for instance, the BP oil spill, then it was postponed for 6 months, and that kept going on.
Well,
And one of the things, Sam, I don't know if your listeners know, but what Tim did was, to start this whole process, was he bid without any money and without any intention to drill in a Bureau of Land Management oil and gas lease auction. And he won 22,000 acres of land, bidding about $1.8 million that he didn't have. And that's what, you know, started this process that got him into trouble. And the reason that he did it is that he saw that, you know, writing letters and marching in protest just wasn't getting anything done. And he thought if he could possibly stop this auction, because it was at the very end of the Bush administration, that perhaps the new Obama administration would invalidate the auction. So that's how it all began.
Well, it's sort of fascinating, too, because Tim describes in the film on how he didn't necessarily have a specific plan. He just, it all seemed to sort of, he walked into the auction. They said, are you here to bid? And he just decided at that point, yeah. And
yeah.
He sat down and he started bidding. I mean, there was a real sense that it was just sort of momentum.
Once they handed him that paddle, he realized he had a very, very powerful instrument in his hands. And at first, he just started bidding up the oil and gas companies, which other people have known to have done. But at one point, he looked over his shoulder and he saw a member of his church, a female, just crying her eyes out, seeing all this great land right outside of Arches and Canyonlands National Parks, as Robert Redford says in our movie, arguably some of the most beautiful land in the United States. And she just started crying, seeing this great land going for oil and gas exploration. At that point, I think Tim said, I know I'm going to get in trouble. I just got to do it. You know, I know there's going to be consequences, but I just got to do it. I got to stop this. And then Tim started winning the parcels, all the parcels.
And so at one point they stopped the auction. Is it because they realized that, wait a second, who is this guy and he doesn't have any cash?
Yes, that's exactly right. But actually, there was an undercover Bureau of Land Management police officer at the auction watching the protest, and he was watching Tim right from the moment that he came into the auction, because he didn't look like everybody else. You know, he wasn't dressed in a suit. He had come there directly from an exam at college, and so they were kind of watching him because they knew that this auction was widely protested. And, you know, we're watching him and watching him, and he didn't do anything. And then when he started bidding, the BLM agent thought, well, I guess he is a real oil and gas man. But then when he started, you know, just bidding and bidding and bidding and winning and winning and winning, the BLM agent stopped the auction, took Tim out and questioned him for 3 hours, and Tim right away, you know, said what he was doing and why he was doing it, and he wasn't arrested at that time, but he was held, you know, and questioned and then released for a while, and his action did stop the auction. They did not resume the auction. So exactly what Tim hoped would happen did happen, and it wasn't until like 3 or 4 months later that he was indicted.
As a matter of fact, these auctions are actually filmed by the local news stations and so forth, and we were lucky enough to get access to that footage, so that even though we didn't start the film until after the action happened, we were fortunate enough to have coverage of the auction itself, and Tim being hustled away and Tim being interviewed by different reporters afterwards and so forth.
Now, will you please, will you also just sort of set the stage as to why these protesters were protesting? Because ultimately, their protests were vindicated, which has, you know, sort of, I mean, ultimately, surprisingly little impact on the trial, though it certainly should have had more. But it wasn't simply that this was, they didn't like the idea of this land being auctioned off. It was also because they felt that it had not been properly sort of, the idea that this land could be auctioned off was not properly vetted from an environmental perspective.
Right. It wasn't properly vetted, but also there was much more land that was included in this auction at the last minute. They kept pushing in more parcels and more parcels and more parcels because Bush knew that, or the Bush administration knew that this was their last chance to help the oil and gas industries to some of this land. And the reason that this particular auction was so highly protested was that, it, as George mentioned, it was land that surrounded many of our national parks. And for those people in the East, the West has some gorgeous, gorgeous areas in Utah, Moab, and, all the cowboy movie landscapes around national parks such as Arches and Canyonlands and Dinosaur National Monument, and just all this red rock and slick rock, beautiful landscape, and it would have been ringed with drill rigs. And so all of the people in that area, particularly Colorado and Utah, were protesting this auction. And so that was why there was so much attention to this particular auction. But in fact, something that I found out by going to Tim's trial is these auctions happen. I'm not sure if it's monthly. I think it's quarterly. But Bureau of Land Management oil and gas lease auctions happen every few months, and land all over the country is being put up for auction. And generally, citizens don't even know that it's happening.
And what would really affect your New York audience, of course, is this whole fracking business that's happening in upstate New York.
Right.
And these are part of the lands that also are auctioned off at these BLM auctions.
And we should say that 2 months after the auction was halted, and Secretary of Interior Ken Salazar, who was at that point sort of the incoming secretary, this auction took place in December, so it was President Obama elect at that point. 2 months later, Ken Salazar is now the Interior Secretary, and he invalidated the auction not because of what Tim had done, but because it was found to be invalid insofar as these lands were not properly vetted and put up for auction. Is that right?
Yeah, that is right. But, yes, and there was a lawsuit. Several environmental groups had filed a lawsuit against this particular auction, and I think it was 77 parcels over around 150,000 acres that they were protesting. And when Salazar invalidated the auction, he felt that the auction hadn't been properly vetted, but Tim's lawyer, Patrick Shea, was the head of the Bureau of Land Management in the Clinton administration. And he really felt, as we do, that if Tim hadn't stopped the auction, that those parcels would have been sold that day, and it would have been very difficult to get that land back. And so yes, it nobody has ever said that the reason that those land parcels were saved was because of what Tim did, but I think we know that when land is sold to energy companies, it's pretty hard to get that land back from them.
The litigation involved in that in the first place would have tied that land up for years and years and years.
True.
But what's clear, though, is that there were grounds to invalidate that auction without Tim DeChristopher's actions. Tim's actions may have made it possible to do so, but there were certainly grounds, and this is relevant because it seems to me that what Ken Salazar was saying is that this was an improper auction. So if you have someone who's involved in civil disobedience to stop something that the government acknowledges was improper to begin with, it should have been a mitigating factor in his case, no?
Yes, and that's what drives me crazy, the fact that something that we have deemed illegal, that someone is put in prison for a couple of years for disrupting something that we, in fact, have said as a government is illegal, the auction itself.
But the problem is, and the reason, first of all, it was a surprise to us that Tim was indicted, because he was indicted after the auction was deemed illegal. But what was really infuriating is that the jury couldn't know that the auction was illegal, and the jury couldn't know where the land was. So they, you know, they didn't have the information that would have helped them understand why Tim did what he did, and the fact that this land had already been taken off the auction block anyway.
And 27 other people in recent history, in fact, I just talked to someone the other night about something else, had been one of those bidders. 27 people in recent history have bid with no intention to drill.
So they're
and they've not been indicted.
All right. So that, I mean, that raises another question, but I want to stay on this from a legal perspective, because this is really fascinating, because DeChristopher is engaging in protest. Yet from the perspective of the court, they're not going to even acknowledge what he's doing is protest, because that would necessitate allowing the introduction of evidence as to what it was that he was protesting. Right. I mean, if the court does not say allow the jury to know that this was an illegal auction, essentially, or one that did not meet the standards of the federal government, which held the auction, it's impossible to see what he's doing in the context of a protest. Did the jury did they need to find that he, in some way, that he was attempting to enrich himself, or is it simply just he was disruptive?
Well, I think more the latter, that it was disruptive. He was not allowed to give any information. The only information that the jury ever heard that would have had any bearing on why Tim did what he did was that he was an environmentalist. But the fact that he, the judge gave the jury such narrow instructions that it really came down, in my opinion, you know, I'm not a lawyer, and, you know, I may not say all of this correctly, but the idea that if you signed a piece of paper that stated that you were a bona fide bidder and you were not a bona fide bidder, that's what this trial is about. The other issue, because there were two federal felony charges against him, was that he purposefully went in there to disrupt an oil and gas lease auction. And that he, you know, it was his intention to disrupt the oil and gas leasing project that goes on, you know, continually. And basically, he was convicted of both of those things. And as you said at the beginning, he really didn't know what he was going to do. He was going to go in there and just sort of, you know, shout or, you know, say this land shouldn't be, you know, drilled on or something.
This land is our land.
When they handed him that paddle, that's what gave him the idea that, well, maybe I can make a bigger impact here. So, yeah, the jury really never had in any way the full information that they should have had to understand this case.
And then what's fascinating also about Tim's story in your film captures this is that Tim at one point in the film quotes, and forgive me, I just don't remember who he was quoting, but he says something to the effect of the way you grow wings is to drop to jump off a cliff and grow your wings.
Amy Dillard.
Yes, and
Annie Dillard, right.
And you grow those wings on your way down. Instead of laying low during this time while he's dealing with postponements of his case and presumably, you know, seeking some type of, you know, or hoping for some type of mitigation here, he goes out and he becomes even more active than he was before.
That's right, and that's what I was saying before about his involvement in mountaintop removal and citizens candidate and many more things. Power shift in Washington, D.C. He followed Al Gore on the stage and gave a very, very impassioned speech. And one of the other things, and maybe I'm jumping ahead too much, is that when Tim was sentenced the judge said to him, "You know, you did not commit the crime of the century, but it was your attitude. It's the fact that you never apologized. You never came forth and apologized to anyone, and you continued to use your activism, standing on a soapbox and expounding on your ideas." And I think that's a real violation of the First Amendment. I mean, don't we have the right to talk about our ideas and our feelings? And yet that was held against him in the sentencing, and the judge actually said, "That's why you're getting a stiff sentence."
And I
think that's outrageous.
It's completely outrageous. I mean, do you think that the Obama administration? I mean, was this? I mean, this obviously. I mean, it's a federal case. How much do you think this came from Washington, and how much do you think it came from federal authorities in Utah?
No, I think it was definitely a federal case. I think obviously Utah was involved, but this was a federal indictment. It was it came down from the Obama Department of Justice.
I'll give you a
and I am sure that President Obama knows of this case.
I'll give you a perfect example how it came from Washington is that we were driving out to have an interview with the head of the BLM, the Bureau of Land Management from Utah. And after about a 6-hour drive, we got a phone call from Tim's attorney. He said that he has canceled the interview. He just got a call from Washington, D.C., where they basically explained to him there is no upside for us to grant an interview to filmmakers. So therefore, cancel the interview. So, I think it comes from Washington.
Do you think that in some ways this was a harbinger of the Obama administration's perspective on these type of things? I mean, I really don't think that I had seen this in the context of what we've seen in terms of whistleblowers and in terms of other protest movements. And I think part of that is because it was so early in the Obama administration. But do you think this was sort of a sense of where the Department of Justice sort of perceived just where they were going to start to crack down on these type of things?
Yeah. I think that that the Obama administration has been, the Department of Justice has been tough on anything that they feel is illegal. And I think that this is, one aspect of this. I also think it's kind of, what Tim has always said about this administration is it's very much a middle of the road administration. And they did invalidate the auction, so they saved the land. And to this day, that land is still safe from oil and gas energy exploitation. But they punished the lawbreaker, so-called. And, maybe that was, here's a gift to the environmentalists and here's a gift to the energy industry. And that's just my opinion. And I think that is what some other people feel, that, all right, we can sacrifice this young man, but we'll save the land. And, it's just unfortunate because, as I say, we were both very shocked. We thought, well, we had gotten involved in making a film about Tim right after he took his action at the Bureau of Land Management. But then when the land and the auction was invalidated, we thought, well, this is going to be a very short film because, everything is going to be fine. And then when he was indicted, we said, oh, well, maybe not everything is going to be fine. And it took on a much longer process. But, yeah, I don't think that we have a purely environmentalist administration.
I felt also there was a little hangover from the Bush administration. In other words, a lot of officials were still there, the appointments of Bush. I think the Obama administration wasn't up to full speed yet. They had just taken over. So I like to give the Obama administration a little bit of slack myself. Hmm. That's personal.
I would qualify Beth, just your statement about the Obama administration going after people who have committed illegal acts. It sort of depends on from what your position is. I mean, we all know. I mean, for that matter, we all know Tim Geithner and had signed documents that said these are my taxes when they weren't. And we all know, of course, the what's gone on with the banking industry in this country. So, I mean, it seems to me that this is not this And this is maybe where we differ, George. It seems to me that, in fact, this pursuit of Tim DeChristopher is not at all out of character with what we've seen from the Obama administration. And maybe I'm drawing too close of a line from DeChristopher to Aaron Swartz to whistleblowers, but it does seem that often those who expose what is problematic end up paying more of a cost than those who are actually problematic. But with that said, let me ask you this. Back in 2009, I think it was, early in 2009, Al Gore was in Copenhagen, at the Copenhagen summit, and he had this to say, that civil disobedience has an honorable history, and when the urgency and moral clarity cross a certain threshold, then I think that civil disobedience is quite understandable and has a role to play, and I expect it will increase, no question about it. I wonder from your perspective, because Tim cited global warming quite a bit in this. In fact, he recounts a talk he went to with a IPC, a Nobel Prize winning scientist, who had basically told him after the talk that it was more or less game over at this point for climate change. And this had really impacted him. So when you hear pronunciations from your perspective, as you're following Tim through this process, do you think there was enough people like Al Gore and others who came out and spoke in his defense? I mean, one would expect that Al Gore, if he wanted to make Tim DeChristopher a rallying cry, it could have been done.
Yeah. Well, early on, as we were putting the film together, we had a clip of Al Gore speaking at the Clinton Initiative, talking about taking to the streets and peaceful civil disobedience. But we could never get it cleared. We just, it's not so easy to get through to Al Gore, and all of the gatekeepers around him would shuffle us from one person to another person to another person. So we finally, in the end, and we didn't have very good quality of the remarks. So in the end, we finally took the remark out because we just couldn't get it cleared and we didn't have good quality. But I think it's absolutely true that an awful lot of people kind of behind the scenes laud this behavior. But if they're in the public eye or in the political circle, they're not so anxious to go on record as supporting that. And, we have certainly found that. And to your point earlier, when I said that the Department of Justice had been, pretty aggressive on going after lawbreakers, I meant more lawbreakers on the left, as you were saying, the people that, perpetrated the 2008 economic downfall, obviously, are still, on their yachts and jets and things like that. So I agree with you that it has not been an easy 4 or 5 years to navigate if you are trying to make a point. But I also have to say that in the beginning, when Tim, I'm not even sure if he had been indicted yet, but at the very beginning of the Obama administration, Tim and a bunch of his supporters went to Washington, and some of them were able to meet with Obama. And they were told, if you want to get your point across, you really have to push me. There has to be an awful lot of protest and demonstration and maybe media coverage that shows that a majority of Americans want these acts. And I think that is what has started to happen in the last few years with the Occupy movements and a lot of the anti-fracking protests and things like that. And I do believe that if enough people push hard enough, that perhaps we can tip the balance in favor of the environment. But as you say about Terry Root, also, Dr. James Hansen and Bill McKibben, everybody is basically saying it is game over. It's just now a matter of how do we deal with the global change, the global climate change that we've wrought.
And once that verdict came in of guilty, and Robert Redford certainly stepped forward and said, "I'm ready to do an interview," gave us a wonderful interview, and in fact is now wearing a Bitter 70 hat in his brand new movie, The Company You Keep. And he was pretty forthcoming in terms of not holding back. A lot of celebrities, as you know, when you interview them, they kind of couch what they say and so forth. He laid it out there how he felt. And he, just like you said before, Sam, about he was holding Wall Street and some of these people and what they're doing on Wall Street accountable and saying, why are they not going to prison? Why is this nice young man that's only trying to save the environment going? So I really respected Redford to step forward and do what he did.
Yeah, and it is impressive, when people put their reputation on the line. It's still just, the impact of Al Gore being more aggressive on this front when he is talking about it. It seems to me there's a bit of a vacuum up at the top when we talk about these protests. And one of the things that really struck me too was that Tim had said at one point, and I think it was after the candidate that he was working for in Utah and had really sort of launched her campaign had failed to win. He said, at the very least, we are assembling the people we know who are going to be able to deal with the implications of climate change, and we're identifying those people for down the road. Let me ask you at this point, what was it that brought you guys? You say you came in shortly after he performed his action. How did you hear about it? What inspired you to go down there and to record this? You say that you thought it might have been a short film after Salazar had basically ruled that the auction itself was illegitimate. But what attracted you to this?
Well, we live in Telluride, Colorado, and our little local newspaper, the Daily Planet, I believe it was, had a picture of Tim on the front page, and it probably was something like, January 2nd or December 28th or something like that, and it explained what he had just done at a Bureau of Land Management auction. And we, George and I, had just finished a film called American Outrage, in which the Bureau of Land Management figured largely. And so I thought that what Tim did was very ingenious, very clever, very smart, and, without hurting anyone, without damaging any property, he had stopped this, what sounded like, an outrageous oil and gas lease auction without hurting anybody or doing anything like that. So I thought, wow, this is something I'd like to know more about. And George and I were on our way to a film festival with our last film, the one I just said, American Outrage, and we had to stop, just like today, and do a phone interview. And the show that was on, the person who was being interviewed right before us was Tim DeChristopher. And we listened to the end of the interview, and I said, that's the guy that, we would like to meet. And they asked him what was next for him, and he said he was on his way to the Wild and Scenic Film Festival in Nevada City, California, and that's exactly where we were on our way to. So, it was sort of serendipitous. As soon as we got to the film festival, we talked to the festival director and asked if they would introduce us to Tim DeChristopher, and by 6 o'clock that night, we'd met him. And then we started talking to him. He got to see the film we had done. He also got to see the relationship that we still had with the woman that we had made the film about. And by the end of the weekend, we'd sort of shaken hands and decided that, we'd follow him around and see what happened. And that was at the very beginning of 2009, and here it is, the middle of 2013, and we're still involved.
Well, we're about to open the film, obviously.
And so give us a little more information. When we say goodbye, I'm going to play a clip that you guys posted on YouTube of Tim DeChristopher, who was just recently let out of prison, and his thoughts upon being released in prison from prison. But tell us
that was a wonderful Q&A that we did after a screening in Salt Lake. It was actually, the government really didn't think about it, but they let him out of prison on April 21st and April 22nd, obviously, is Earth Day. So we formed a big screening in Salt Lake on Earth Day, and it was Tim's first opportunity to speak out. And we had his Q&A streamed to about 50 different venues around the United States as a pre-release before our New York premiere.
And so where can people see the film in the coming months, and how can they set up screenings? Just give us a little information about that.
Well, we're very excited because on May 17th, the film Bitter 70 will open at the Quad Cinema in New York City. And for a week run, I think it's the 17th through the 23rd. And Tim will be there on the 17th and 18th. So it's his first trip, first allowed trip after his incarceration. He has 3 years of probation now. Hmm. And so he will be there at the Quad Theater on the 17th and 18th. And then we go to our next theatrical opening is in Los Angeles on June 7th for a week. But in between, we do community screenings, grassroots organizations, that sort of thing, and people can find out how to host a screening by emailing us at info@gageproductions. And we'd love to. What we're trying very hard to do with this film is connect the dots, you know, try and get different grassroots groups and activists together so that they can move this process forward, and so that we can try to, you know, create a livable world for ourselves.
We will we'll post that email on our site at majority.fm, and also a link to bitter70film.com. Why don't you give us that email one more time so that we can make sure that we post that correctly?
Okay, so our email address is info@gageproductions.com. And then the website for the film, which will also take you to all kinds of information, is Bitter70Film, B-I-D-D-E-R, film, bitter70film.com.
Yeah. I think starting tomorrow, the website, the links will take you to this Q&A that I talked about. We edited together about six clips of Tim answering questions in Salt Lake, and his answers are pretty impressive.
You know, if there's time, one thing that may or may not be on those clips, and that is something really important and really exciting, is that during Tim's 2 years of incarceration, he read a lot and studied a lot and applied for college. And he, in the last month that he was incarcerated, he was accepted to Harvard Divinity School with a full scholarship.
Wow.
So that's where he's going from prison.
Well, that's fantastic. Were there other parts that that you felt you would have liked to include into the film? It just didn't make it there?
Well, the only thing was that we would have liked to have had some interviews and had some points of view from the Department of Interior, Mr. Salazar, et cetera. Also, the BLM, Bureau of Land Management, as I said, they always canceled. We were able to interview one gentleman that had already retired, and he's the one that says in the film, sometimes the BLM would walk into a meeting and just say, we own the White House. We can do what we want to do. And but unfortunately, he was the only one from the BLM we were able to interview.
And so
that's the only thing. I mean, I can't honestly say that there's tons of stuff on the cutting room floor. I mean, there's some demonstrations and so forth. Demonstration against the biggest polluter outside of Salt Lake, Kennecott, and there's also some very good things that Peaceful Uprising, which Tim started, are doing, which is they'll go into the inner city and they'll build a garden for an inner city school and have it all ready for planting on Monday morning. So things like that. We tried to keep a pretty straight line, if you would, with Tim and what Tim was doing, but he did co-found Peaceful Uprising, which is doing an awful lot of good work around this country in terms of protesting tar sands, the pipeline, tons of stuff.
Well, Beth and George Gage, the film is Bitter 70. Thank you so much for taking the time today. I really appreciate it.
Great.
Well, thank you for the really good questions, and we appreciate being on your show.
Bye-bye. All right, folks.
Bye-bye.
Let's play this clip from the day after, I guess it was, Tim DeChristopher was released from prison. He spoke at a Q&A session after a showing of the film Bidder 70 in Salt Lake City. And this is part of what he had to say.
The next step for the climate movement is they stop waiting for people like me to tell them what the next step is. You know, I've been pretty isolated for the last couple of years, and there's been a lot going on. You know, things have progressed pretty rapidly while I've been locked up, and I've tried to follow that as much as I could, and a lot of what I've seen has been encouraging. Before I got locked up, the Occupy movement hadn't even started. It didn't exist before I got locked up. Like, the biggest social movement in my lifetime in this country happened and I missed it. I only saw it on television, and that wasn't very good coverage, frankly. You know, I think there's a lot of people that feel moved to take action, that are concerned, and that want to do something, but feel like, oh, I'm just one person. What can I do? And I think I hope that we're getting to a point where we're building enough connections as a movement that people know that they're not just one isolated person taking action, but they're one person taking a step with a movement connected to them, and everybody can push out in all the different ways that they can think of. You know, when Cesar Chavez talked about being well organized as a movement, he said, for us, being well organized is not everybody doing the same thing or everybody being on the same page. When our movement is well organized, that means that everybody is pushing on the wall, all in their own spots. And when one person finds that weak spot in that wall that gives a little bit, we all push behind that spot until it opens up and makes a crack in that wall, and we all wedge through that and open it up into a wider gap. And that's what for Cesar Chavez, that's what an organized movement looked like. Not all the people following the direction of one person or one group, but all the people trying different things, and a lot of them not working. But the ones that do, we all mobilize behind them and push together. And I think that's what we need, a movement that is a little bit out of control.
All right, folks, that's Tim DeChristopher on the day after his release, about a month ago, I guess now. We're going to take a break, head into the better half of the show. This is where I tell you we need your support. Ladies and gentlemen, yesterday, as you know, we had a members-only show with Matt and Mike, and I took that opportunity to catch up on our backlog of emails and PayPal problems, and we had a lot of people who basically had to cancel their membership because of financial pressures. Which totally understandable, and we try and make sure that each one of those people, we work out a deal with them so they can continue to have access to the program. But if you're one of those people who are fortunate enough not to have those financial constraints, we need your support to continue to do this show on a regular basis, and it is relatively painless. You pay considerably more for cable or HBO for that matter, or anything else that you can actually probably find for free online, but I'm not going to tell you how. You know, you pay for this, other things. So if you can afford to pay for this program and support it, if it's important enough to you, please do. You can do so at majority.fm. All right, folks, you can call the program, 646-257-3920, 646-257-3920. You can IM me at Majority FM coming up. End timers, they have no problem with global warming. The Air Force ahead of fighting sexual assault, and the Air Force commits sexual assault, I guess fair enough, not on the job. to be fair to him.
Compartmentalizing?
That's right. I mean, leave unto Caesar, I guess, is one of those. Also, gun protesters claiming they're going to march on Washington with, well, maybe 10,000 loaded guns. There's some civil disobedience for you. I wonder how many of those people will be arrested and put in jail for 2 years and then on probation for three. I believe if you commit a crime like that in Washington, D.C., I wonder if that is a federal law that you're breaking. I don't know if that's a municipal or federal ordinance. It'll be interesting to see. All right, folks, all that and more coming up right after this break.